chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Let us in. Let us fill your quarantine hole. It's a State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports with your boy, the Brian Campbell. Back, yes, with a bang. It is the box edition. Let's get inside that box. You got to play with the box. You got to do all that stuff. The Brian Campbell, the voice that you hear. So much love for you during this crazy and wild season. Myself, Rafe Boogs, we're back to give you something worth listening to. Hopefully, everyone enjoyed our Steven Seagal Marked for Death all-action rewind with the great Eric Raskin last week. Hey, maybe more of that to come, because it doesn't look like we'd be getting any fights anytime soon. But we got a fun show for you today. Rafe Boogs going to join me, go over the latest headlines. We're each going to share five fights you should be watching, or could be watching, during the corona quarantine. Some of our favorites, some of our forgotten classics. We'll be counting those down. And, you know, why not F around and talk to Grandpa? We got Bob Arum on this show today. We're going to talk about a lot of things. It's going to get wild in here. Why not, right? He's at home. You know, he knows how to spend the next 4 years if he needs to. We know that. But let me bring in Detroit's finest, the best boxing writer in all of boxing. He works for TheAthletic.com. His name is Rafe Bartholomew.
Let me lick you up. Let me lick you down. Turn around. Let me lick you all around. Boy, let me lick you down. Gonna rub-a-dub. Rub-a-dub. Rub-a-dub.
Hey, Rafa.
Yo.
When will you be a Detroit Free Press bestselling author?
You never know. It could be pretty soon. You know, the clock is a ticking here in Sportslandia.
Yes, yes. Hey, Rafe. It's a pretty serious time out there. Every time I turn on the news, I want to do a backflip off the top of my roof. So, can you tell the people New York City's a rough place right now? I'm in the burbs. You're in Detroit. You holding up okay? How's your situation over there? Because obviously, we like to crack jokes. We want to distract people. But, you know, people are dying. Things are happening. What are you seeing up there?
Well, I'm not seeing much, Brian. I'm staying home like they tell me to. I hear a little bit. My girlfriend's sister is a doctor here in Detroit. She is on the front lines. Once a week, or not once, every 2 weeks, really, we'll go over to their house and stand in the backyard on opposite sides and shout at each other.
I'm gonna make you my girlfriend.
I mean, that's both, you know, like our families go. It's not just me. That's weird. in any case, but no, I'm not seeing much at all. I'm doing what I'm told to do. I stay inside. I only go out to walk the dog. I run the stairs. I live on the second floor of a duplex. It's like an apartment. I don't know. There's two apartments on this thing, and I live in the second floor. And I just run up and down the stairs for exercise. So I'm not even running outside. Yo, on Sunday, I don't feel good about this. I don't know what the right response is, but I get agitated when I see other human beings in the wild now. And they're not doing anything inappropriate. You know, they have equal right to be agitated at me for seeing me. But when I see them, I'm like, yo, get the F out of my way. Get off this street. I don't care about your people. I don't care about your walk. I don't care about your exercise. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild. I don't know how to act anymore, Rafe. It's all unprecedented times for sure. Legitimate love for our listeners. You know, not everybody is sitting at home doing podcasts like I am or whatever. People have lost their jobs. You know, I mean, I see my barber on Facebook with a heartbreaking message about his loss of income. I'm cutting my own hair these days. Some people just letting it all go. You see Ben Roethlisberger. I don't know if he's on a street corner yet with the beard and the hair, great quarterback, probably not a great date, but, yeah, Rafe, you know, are you going to grow out those red locks? You going to let the ginger flag fly?
I don't think I have a choice. I don't know if I have the equipment or the cojones, Brian, to do what you do like you do and cut my own hair. Although I am inspired because that looks pretty, pretty good. But I think I'm just going to come out like a wild man when it's all over. And because I've never had my hair long in my life. And then I'll go to a salon and say, you know, for one time in my adult life, you know, do what you do, you know, do that magic, do that voodoo that you do so well and make me look like Fabio or something.
So what you want to do? I want to shoop, baby. I want to shoop, baby. Oh, my goodness, Rafe. And he's coming to this a yard. Way. SNLP want to get with me, cool, for the hell. I hit the skins for the hell. That guy was real cool. I have no idea who he was, Rafe.
That was a Red Hot Lover Tone.
Oh, thank you. Okay, because they wanted
Tone and Poke.
They wanted the bod, and there was the hot rod, right? Yes, yes. 12
have
inches.
You sounding like I'm not going to say that.
Yes, yes, indeed, indeed.
Maybe he blew his wad
I
early.
I think he did. I actually think he did, indeed. I did want to close legitimately. With some nice thoughts, maybe share our Corona prayer with not only my people, your people, Detroit's people, all that.
Coronavirus, we pray that it be dissolved with healing, with healing, with healing. Your cervix, your penis, your vagina.
Well, that's part of it.
Your buttocks, your colon. Go wash your hands.
I think she might have threw a load there, Rafe. I don't know what's going on there. All right.
I still that one does not make a lot of sense. Nah. But hey, well, who cares, man?
That is true. We know that we hope to be an entertainment filler for you folks. We hope, like Peanuts, we can inspire you.
Peanuts, that really inspired me because.
Thank you. Wow, James Back Jr. texting me right now. James Back Jr. may be off the Twitters, but he's texting you and I right now. So. We get the hilarious drop in every once in a while from the bag.
He does exist.
Yes.
You and I both know he does exist.
Rafe, you know what does exist and you never told me? And frankly, I'm a little upset at you. This little YouTube theme song that I dropped into your DMs yesterday, you're like, yeah, you know, we've been doing that video since the beginning. Rafe, how have you never shared this remixed Ray Torres classic with me?
Music make you lose control. Music make you lose control. Let me put some water.
Put the water on your balls. Let me put the water on your balls.
Okay, Eric, deep breath now. Let me
put some water on your balls.
Let me put some water on your balls.
Let me put some water on your balls.
Okay, Eric, deep breath now.
Let me put some water on your balls.
Do you know who recorded that? How long have you known this existed?
A long time, Brian. For whatever reason, I link to that fairly often in my writing, because I reference it often in my writing.
Sorry, I was busy
and I
watching.
Want to include?
I was busy
a
watching
link.
PBC Face to Face. I couldn't. I didn't have time to read your stuff, right? All right.
I don't look. I don't think that the crap I write is worth reading anymore. But it's like. Yeah, so when I reference it and link to it, that is often the first and sometimes the only version of the quote that I can find easily on YouTube. It's the first one that comes up when you search like Morales water on your balls or let me put some water on your balls. And so that's really why I've been seeing it for years. I think I have found other like the non-musical version. But you have to start watching the actual fight, and you have to get to the actual round. And
yes,
it's much easier to just link that one video, even if it has the weird bad Missy music. And I think that's why I never got that pumped over it, because I don't like that Missy song. I don't know this Missy Elliott song.
I don't know this Missy. To me,
gifted producer and a gifted songwriter, but I never liked her as not just because she wasn't like some Viva Hot babe, but because I didn't think she could rap. That was when I was in high school and was like a real rappity rap hard backpacker, thought everyone had to have bars, Brian. And Missy didn't pass that test for me. So anyway, that's why I never got pumped on the level that I just saw you dancing.
I didn't know that was a Missy
like a dancing
hit.
Machine.
Were you, do you think she has a big D? And would you search it?
It's
2020. You know, athletes do a lot of different things. Hey, shout out to Paulie Malignaggi's acting debut. You see that clip he shared on IG?
I can't wait till Gravesend comes out. Did he mention, I should look it up, where that's going to be streaming, where I can catch that? It seems like it could be a Hulu thing.
I don't know, but I'm fired up for it.
Yo, relax.
He's basically playing himself. I mean, he's playing like a guy connected to organized crime, but the personality of that character, he's just being Paulie, and it works out great. Maybe he has
a guy from the block, you know. Is he playing a fighter in the clip that he put out there? He's being sort of castigated by his childhood friend for beating up a guy with mob connections over a girl, but it's unclear if he's playing a professional fighter. And but whatever it is, man, I'm old school New York stuff, crime films. This is not a hard sell for me. And we get Paulie, who's like the Paulie on top.
Well, Paulie's been on top a lot, just to let you know. And it's unclear whether that movie is set in 2013 or not, so we don't know what his character's future will be in there. But one thing about his girl,
I beat Paulie. I left with his belt and his girl.
So we'll see if that factors into the storyline at all. Rafe, we're just rambling because that's what boxing is making us do now. Spoiler alert, do you care? There ain't much to care about, brother, right? Unless you have Eric Morales versus Zaire Rahim in your top 5 coronavirus killer fight countdown coming up later in the show.
I don't. Spoiler alert, in case you were wondering. You know what I didn't care about, Brian, and you're gonna shut me up real quick once I start opening up this can of worms. I didn't care about Showtime replaying the Marquez Vasquez fights. I got YouTube, bro. I don't why did everyone pretend like this was not, these fights were not available, or we all had to sit down on Saturday night and watch them? I did appreciate the screen time for BC and Luke Thomas. That was dope. But I can watch these fights at my leisure anytime. I've been watching them for years.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. YouTube has changed the game on that regard. But I did like everyone coming together at a normal time where
I ain't in this for community,
where we would be watching boxing and tweeting up two dudes who deserve the love, respect, and re-mentioning, which is Izzy
like
Vasquez,
Brian Campbell, and Luke Thomas. They deserve
Marquez.
Our love and respect.
Do you have any love for their fourth fight, or is it basically Rocky V to you?
I'm not gonna give it the Rocky V disrespect because they put so much on the line. You know, it's just they had already fought for the championship of each other, they just didn't have much left to give. That's okay.
Who has abused that line more? Well, James Foley has abused that line in my DMs the most, but is that a Thomas Hauser abusal? Is that a Jim Lampley? Who, Larry Merchant? Who has violated that line more?
I saw that come out during Wilder Fury 2 fight week. I believe the great Jerry Eisenberg from New Jersey was quoted. They asked, of course, it was a big heavyweight fight. They asked him about all the heavyweight fights he had covered, and he mentioned the Ali Frazier fights, and he used the line. He's like, those men weren't fighting for a belt; they were fighting for the championship of each other. And I was like, he used it. He did it.
Yes, 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 never jab with the jabber, Rafe.
If Deontay doesn't jab, Tyson Fury would jab. And, you know, Deontay shouldn't allow that, that him, he shouldn't allow him to jab before he, and him not jabbing. So he should jab with the jabber.
Actually, it's your jab. You know, I mean, you could, I could take Deontay's word for it, but, you know. Yeah, okay. No updates on Dwyer. I let it blow over his move, whatever facilitated that move. But
I can't. Dwyer is in a weird place right now. He's doing a lot of coronavirus content and a lot of fairly conspiratorial coronavirus content. You might be into that, Brian, but
I should get deeper into that.
I don't need that misinformation in my life. I get enough of it from our duly elected public officials. I don't need it from my president, Richard Dwyer.
Yeah. Well, do you think he's more or less likely to join the show now? Because look, it's Corona season. This is the ultimate vamp filler time. We could be going deep with Richie. We could do a Richie origin podcast. I want to find out about his youth in Jamaica. There's so much I need to know, Rafe. I will scare him away so quick.
Probably. I mean, just like you scared away Tyson Fury, you come on strong and not everyone is always ready for that.
You know, though, in something we explored Saturday in reliving the Vasquez Marquez trilogy, sometimes people are just perfect for each other. They just work. They just mix. Bob Arum and I, as interviewer and interviewee, we can do that dance, Rafe.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, Bob does not mind the BC full court press, the BC James Kirkland treatment where the enthusiasm is all over you like musk.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. We always remember whose night it is.
Hold on, Sean. Sean, this is Danny's night. Hold on, Sean. Hold on.
Shout out to Danny, whether we're talking Jacobs, whether we're talking Garcia. You know any other Dannys?
I'm sure there are a few. Wasn't it Danny O'Connor, the guy got knocked out by, what was that?
Tito Bracero. Yes.
Yeah,
that was a hell of a finish right there. Wow, look at how deep we've fallen in podcasts where we're filling time by just calling up famous Danny's. You know, too bad I didn't have any on the line. Shout out to the Irish
crew. Oh,
that's
Danny's music.
It is Danny's music. Shout out to the Irish crew. Shout out to the,
Then you realize, oh, that's Danny.
Yeah, that is. Shout out to the, Godinez crew, ADK crew. Shout out, any other cities?
Shout out to Omaha, Nebraska!
Indeed. Shout out to everybody's got an Instagram show. I saw Ray Flores starting one, a PBC one, with Peter Quillen as the guest today. Will you be checking that out?
I don't watch Instagram stories, man. I'm out on that. I got nothing against it. I'm sure, I hope that is a successful venture for everyone doing it, but that ain't for me. I watch enough crap. I'm good with Mayweather Boxing Channel YouTube videos and all the rest of the time I waste in my terrible life. Like, why am I going to watch Instagram on top of that?
I don't got that DAZN shit.
Yeah.
Speaking of that DAZN,
I wish I didn't have that either. Worse, how many people, everybody who listens to this, how much are you regretting your trying to be smart and paying $100 up front for a year of DAZN? I am.
Well, you got to understand, Eddie Hearn had a platform. He lured Canelo Alvarez to the platform. Rafe, to fill this Corona filler, aside from the fights we will recommend later, are you in on this Tiger King phenomenon? I've done like three separate podcasts about it. I'm living it. I'm in it, Rafe.
I haven't given it the proper attention. I've only watched like two episodes. It's funny, but I don't know. I haven't binged it yet.
All right. Someone who's looking to fill our Corona time recklessly has been that skinhead white guy, Dana White.
That's your boy right there, Brian. Explain what is happening with your boy Dana White?
I don't know. At first, it was like, okay, you're just like, he wants to, you know, maybe there's financial hardships with the parent company Endeavor, who just laid off a ton of people and took on a lot of debt to buy the UFC, and then you're like, well, maybe it's, you know, this. Then you're like, well, maybe it's just Dana's pride that he refuses to take this L right now. Because, I mean, he's looking to blow up a fight so many years in the making, you know, now that Khabib may not be able to travel from Russia. But is it surprising to you that the adult in the combat room right now is boxing? I'm blown away by this. I would have assumed we would have had boxing fights every weekend.
Well... I don't have boxing fights every weekend. I mean, I do eat steak every day. But
I'm small man.
I am surprised that MMA is coming off worse than boxing in this. If I wonder, yeah, no, it is surprising. But nobody has any choice. I looked, that's supposed to be in like less than 3 weeks,
April
right?
18th.
That event.
Yes. April 18th.
And it's a TBD location.
And it's now potentially a TBD main event. They're basically, I mean, like, there are some big name fighters, Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal, Dustin Poirier, who are like, I'm in, I'll do it. But I mean, like, you know, this Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov fight almost has a Mayweather Pacquiao type build, not on the same level commercially, but from the standpoint that, like, it was originally scheduled 5 years ago, five separate times. It fell apart due to, like, bad luck, injury, illness. And now, for the fifth time, it may not happen. Yet Dana's like, "Oh, it's fine. Tony Ferguson can fight somebody else." It's like, "Well, no, you can't. You can't do that."
It's a much talk about taking an L. It's in my opinion, it is a much greater L to take to stage this event, to risk X amount of people's lives, no matter how many precautions you put in place. If they were able to, or even because it's a terrible look publicly. It's irresponsible. It's going to piss people off. I mean, there will be fans who watch the fight and enjoy the fight, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it's just a terrible, like, it's no social responsibility whatsoever. It's kind of just disgusting. It's not a good. I don't know who is advising them business wise. Also, what media is going to be able to cover this? What kind of hype? How are they going to be able to promote this in some kind of great way? Of course, they'll put it on TV and it'll probably rate because nothing else is on. But still, they won't be able to maximize it or even get close to it. That nobody's going to. Whoever, if anyone has to travel that didn't want to, it just is. What a nightmare. Don't do that, man. It sucks.
And it's weird because, you know, UFC has that giant TV package with ESPN. ESPN's like the only outlet that's not criticizing him. In fact, they've had Dana on SportsCenter and, like, you know, softball after softball, not like, hey, Dana, like, you know, no one else is doing anything, bro. In fact, legally, they're making it impossible for you. No one's asking those questions. I mean, maybe Bob wasn't wrong.
It's a great, great sport. I love that mixed martial arts. I think it's trash.
We can get his thoughts later in the episode on Dana's decision making there, Rafe. Wow.
What does ESPN even have to gain from one event? What is it? Is one event? How much is that going to, like, clear up all the money they've lost during this? No, they're lucky. They got Disney money behind them. They're going to get bailed out probably too.
Well, you know how they're going to get bailed out here is they're moving up that Michael Jordan 98 Bulls documentary to April 19th. Rafe, you fired up for that? I got movement for that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Here, let me name drop a little bit. I'm not on the big level. None of the big names, but I've met the director of that one, Jason Hahir, a couple times. And he's a real good guy.
Ain't
he a
big Grantland fan?
What's that?
Ain't he a Grantland guy in some way?
He did. So I don't know if any, but no, I do know that nobody watched this, but Grantland did a short film that he directed, about Kid Chocolate.
That's right.
And,
yes.
And so that was when I first met him. And we actually talked about doing something on McSorley's that never really came together because I had to finish the book before and I was too busy working at Grantland to finish the book. So all that never, you know, it's out on me. And he's done, you know, his 30 for 30s have been good. He directed the Andre the Giant documentary,
That's
which is excellent.
That's how I know the name the most. Yes.
And, you know, and he's also just an awesome guy.
He's a big Simo guy. Maybe he's a stretch three.
I don't know nothing about that, but I like Jason a lot.
Thank you. Thank you, Rafe. I do not want to poke the bear here. The bear is your dog, right?
Yeah, I do have a dog named Bear. He looks like a bear, too.
How's he holding up during Corona?
He's loving it, man. He gets long-ass walks all the time.
Yeah. He already knew this was the best season for him.
His coronavirus the best.
All right, we're going to stop rambling and take a quick pause for the cause. On the other side, we'll get into a little box news, have a little bit of fun. Bob Arum coming up as well. Yeah, that's it. All right. Enjoy. Dig it. Yeah.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen.
This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
And we're back, BC Rafe Boogs, grandpa to come, Bob Arum, Hall of Fame, top rank, yes, joining us later in the show. Rafe, we got a little bit of news. I mean, there's actually things worth talking about. You can question whether this is actually worth talking about. Your boy, one of your favorite gypsies, Billy Joe Saunders, your 168 title holder, put up a interesting time filler video in which he jokingly hit a heavy bag and gave a speech that during this coronavirus, if your significant female other is giving you problems, here's how you should take care of her. He proceeded to describe the best way to throw the opening punch, Rafe, and then basically was like, and if she's not down or dead or hurt, here's how you should finish her off. Obviously, it's 2020, all right? So people reacted a certain way to that, which was negative. He has subsequently.
How would they have reacted in 2013, bro?
That's a good point. He's actually taken down his social media. The video has been deleted, but the British Board of Boxing Control has given him an indefinite suspension, Rafe. There's elements of cancel culture in this. There's also the idea of could this or should this block him from the Canelo fight that we were hoping to get in May, although Corona probably...
Nobody was hoping to get that fight in May.
Although Corona probably... Well, here's the deal. Corona probably kills that anyway because your colleagues are telling us Triple G is going to get the third Canelo fight this fall. So your thoughts on this whole...
We also broke down in detail Saunders Canelo. So we'll tell you whatever you need to hear this week and then tell you whatever is new next week.
Wow.
And staff the points.
That was a message to you from Billy Joe. Thank you.
So this is Billy Joe Saunders is not a very he's a jerk, right? He acts like a jerk. I don't know him. I can't say definitively. He does a lot of really, really, really inappropriate and offensive things. Things that piss off boxing fans, which is hard to do, right? There's a lot of politically incorrect stuff, and that is embraced in boxing. So I'm almost like a bastion of old school values, good and bad, that overall the boxing culture appreciates. And even in that mix, Billy Joe Saunders regularly, constantly does stuff that crosses the line and people just look at it and say, yo, that was effed up, man. What is wrong with you? Why? Like that is not just boxers being boxers or athletes being athletes or boys being boys or any of that BS. He's just doing like dirtbag behavior and commentary. And this falls into that category. Personally, it is a joke in awful taste. I find it less, offensive or damaging than, you know, what he was apologizing for last week, when he got some buddies of his kicked off of an airplane coming back to the UK because he was making loud coronavirus jokes about them being sick.
Yikes, Rafe.
It's not as I also think it was, you know, a year or two ago when he was filming without any consent, a homeless woman about turning, you know, playing pranks on her about making her turn tricks. Also, really, really awful.
And his son punched Willie Monroe Jr. in the balls.
Did he instruct the child to do that? I've actually seen that alleged, but I never thought that was the case.
You all right? I learned it by watching you.
So this is the pattern of behavior with Billy Joe Saunders. It is all really, really bad and dislikable. But at the same time, the British Board of Boxing Control, this is this is classic boxing sanctioning body petty bureaucracy garbage. Like, this is what you're going to suspend someone for? You got how they have, like, somehow the most galaxy brained dumbest doping issues on the planet, where because of their privacy concerns, fights go on after fighters are test positive because they haven't had their full hearing yet. So what was the point of doing, we've been doing doping since the beginning. What was the point of doing doping testing if you're not going to protect the fighters? And then after the fact, you're going to go in and investigate. What is the point? And so they mess that kind of stuff up all the time. And it's just, they are basically just responding to a social media event, which is, look, the anger, the hatred, the criticism is all warranted in this case. But this is boxing. There are fighters active, retired, in the Hall of Fame, beloved, not beloved, who have been credibly accused and or convicted of real violent domestic assault against women. This is just a guy, a dickhead, it. Making a dumb joke. So why, you know, it's just like, get your stuff in, get your S straight.
Get your house in order. Yes. I was on Morning Combat this week on Showtime and basically was like so fed up with Billy Joe having done this, having, you know, come on. It's like he's got it, that I was like, yeah, he should lose the Canelo fight. Now I realize in reality how absurd that is in light of Gervonta Davis being on camera potentially striking a woman. And I'm like, well, you know, there's
Sergei Kovalev getting ready to go to a trial whenever coronavirus is over.
Floyd, all that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to be in a – that's the truth. I don't want to be in a cancel culture. I want to be on this show making stupid and inappropriate remarks in passing sometimes. I think the difference in this case was this was, like, insanely premeditated. I mean, he set the video up around the joke. It wasn't like, oh, a camera – it wasn't like Coogan Cassius caught him at a honest moment or candid moment when he was making a ill, you know, tasteful joke. But his history is bad in this. So here's the deal. He's probably going to lose the fight anyway. Because, Rafe, we ain't fighting for a while, okay? And when the fighting does come back on, it's not like every fighter is going to be in fight-ready shape that day. So
also, Brian, the British Board of Boxing Control probably has no effect on whether or not Saunders Canelo ever happens, because Canelo wasn't going to fight Billy Joe Saunders in the United Kingdom ever. That was going to be in Vegas. And just like Tyson Fury is ignoring everything that the British Board of Boxing Control says and does, sent them back his license, probably wiped his ass with it before he sent it to them and said, I'm fighting in the States. See ya. If boxing wanted to jam through Saunders Canelo, they will. If they want to, they will. They still will.
Keep me testosterone pumping.
He probably actually, what's the right word for this? Before he sent it back to them, he probably provided the dressing, the homemade dressing to the salad.
He splooged on it, you mean.
Oh, that's so gross to put it that way. So gross. See, I was trying to dance around it, and you wanted to basically go right through it. So, not the way men do it, not the way I do it. Speaking of salads, Rafe.
Well, the first thing I do is make them toss my salad.
Yes, Rafe.
Are you a maple syrup or a jelly?
With jelly. Jelly, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, look, if they wanted to make Saunders Canelo happen, you're telling me Texas, that commission won't still put it on? Vegas, Nevada will still put it on. Because those places can't really set a precedent of not allowing fighters to make a living over terrible things they've said, because then all of a sudden they have a problem with all the other terrible things fighters say across the sport. I think if the way for Billy Joe Saunders to lose this fight is if public opinion turns against him, people say, we don't want to see this guy. And, you know, Match Room and Golden Boy say, look, we're not going to make much money off this guy anyway. Let's just keep it moving and find somebody else. There's lots of good qualified opponents out there from 160 to 175 pounds. Callum Smith is out there. He's out there fighting for autism research. I mean, you know, we got choir boys.
And Rafe. And, well, first of all,
Texas forever street.
But second of all, it's a potential trap fight. I know the judges wouldn't give it to him, but BJS is tricky enough where is that a Lara-like fight in your mind for Canelo? That's a Lara-like fight.
And yeah, I see what you're saying. I believe it could be, but I also am less convinced that Billy Joe Saunders has the on-off switch in quite the same way as Tyson Fury does. And he gets a lot of credit for looking good on three nights in his life and against good fighters, but not really great fighters, right? Chris Eubank Jr., late career Andy Lee, and David Lemieux. The David Lemieux one really sticks in my craw, Brian, because you see all the people who want to crap on Gennady Golovkin's resume and they're like, what's his best win? David Lemieux? And then a lot of the same jerk-offs turn around and say, oh, BJS, he could beat Canelo. Did you see how he beat Lemieux? What the? Are you crazy? Like, what is that? Against who?
Against who? Against
it's
who?
Lemieux.
Against who?
All right. All right. All right. You think you care about his hair, his people, his good looks? No. No, you don't. BJS, Brian. BJS can lick the sweat off of Jimmy Fingers' balls if he wants, but right.
You know, I wouldn't sell BJS the sweat off my balls.
Hey, ref, right. Ref, people
Screwface
seem to like
going to do him 1,000 times dead, yes. Worse than Canelo would do him.
People seem to really love that trip down memory. A lot of people saying, BC, you did get the score wrong. Why did you not do Out for Justice? But people want us to go. In fact, I've got a lot of DM slides of people sending me random ass action movies that are like, you and Rafe need to hit this.
Can we get into a little bit of American Ninja? I am a big Dudikoff fan.
Oh, yeah, give me some of that Dudikoff. Yes, I'll get into that as well.
Filmed in the Philippines, by the way.
Ooh, we're going to have to reschedule. We're going to have to go back to the horn on something like this because it matters.
Did you say horn?
Yeah, speaking of horn, do you have a response to that?
No response. I'll respond with my fists in the ring.
Yeah, bang it full of quarters and get on with it. Indeed. All right. Other bit of news, Rafe, is Wilder Fury 3, which, by the way, every fight's getting canceled and postponed. So this isn't actually news. The news in question comes from the top operator, your colleague, Mike Coppinger of The Athletic, saying the new targeted date, and I'm sure we can talk to Bob about this later, is somewhere in early October. For Wilder Fury 3. The only bit of discussion for me, Rafe, in this, and I'll pose it to you as a question, is how much could this help Deontay Wilder's chances? Not just the postponement, but the overall corona season that could give him mentally, physically, spiritually a time to heal and maybe receive some things that he needs to try to win that third fight.
Look, I think that is... That's plausible. I think it probably does give him more time, especially on the mental side, getting over, you know, resolving whatever he needs, getting his head right again to go back into such a huge fight, especially after losing in such a just definitive, just getting the floor wiped with himself. That more time can only help with that. I don't know if I think that's why I would. I don't think that's. That's Deontay Wilder's best chance going into this fight. It's just best chance is still to land a huge shot. But
land that shot, Rafe, should he be doing something we've teased and talked about in the aftermath of that second fight, which is be an attacker, be a destroyer, stop looking for that one big counter shot that will end the fight. But instead, I know you hate when I bring up the Fats DuVernay rematch. I know you hate when I bring up the ancestral spirits of the bronze Brahma and the mask and what it does to him. But shouldn't he try to fight?
You saw what the mask did to him in that last fight. Weighed him down. 40 pounds of mask.
Shouldn't he try to fight Fury like he fought Fats DuVernay the second time? Isn't that his most dangerous chance to just come out and just try to swallow you, Rafe? I mean, I didn't mean to throw that.
I don't know if I want him to swallow me.
It's not a nice feeling, but I'm a man that can cope with anything. Me.
I agree with you. Yes, I think a more aggressive stance, basically, you know, and letting his hands go, right? Because that's the only way he's going to win this fight. He's not going to outbox Tyson Fury in any version of this fight. So anything that allows him, whether it's being wild and aggressive, however he gets to the point of being as dangerous as possible for as long as that fight lasts, then yeah, I think that is, and that's sort of a very basic way to describe it, but I still think that's true. It's just he give himself, throw everything at the wall and see if anything sticks, because it probably won't. But if you don't swing, you're not gonna get anything out of it.
Rafe, he probably won't change trainers, and I'm not saying he needs. Well, I kind of am saying he needs to. He needs some kind of strategical/motivational change. He does. I'm sorry. No disrespect to Jay Diaz and Mark Breland, who we had been in a lot of ways praising leading up to the last fight, or maybe I have, saying, look, he'll never be a great boxer, but he's better than you realize, and he does more things than you realize. And I think he does. I think when you watch that Luis Ortiz rematch, it's not one lucky punch.
Third best heavyweight.
Now, first of all, yes. Second of all, he set that shot up over a period of rounds. But let's say he did decide to dump those two. I've got two options, two offers.
I decided to dump it two earlier also.
Oh, Rafe, you always get me. You always get me.
You have a big dump in your pants.
Indeed, indeed. So where I'm going with this is, I'm going to offer you two trainers. Here's the first one. Tell me if you like this fit.
Wilder, a guy who really can't fight, who's wild, he's unorthodox, his technique stinks, but he can punch. He can punch.
Who wouldn't want to train him? What could Teddy do? Could he make him flip cheeseburgers? What could he do with him, Rafe?
Yes, it is nice.
You're feeling it.
It's good. that's a bad idea. I think if there were more time, if he were taking a slow rebuilding approach, if we were going to basically not go right back into the rematch and look at like a three fight path back to a title fight against Anthony Joshua or Tyson Fury or whoever is still around at that championship level in a year and a half or two after he's gotten some fights back under his belt, then yes. Hire Teddy if you think Teddy's the best choice, or could be someone else.
Well, I got a wild card choice for the second one. Okay. Are you willing to hear me out?
All right, let me know.
He goes by the name
number two. Drop this number two on me, bro.
Tyson Fury looked like he wanted to give you his last name.
Oh, who's that, Mr. Skitty?
He didn't do nothing. No need for a part three.
What about Mr. Skinny? He could train him from the front seat of his car, but just for that motivation, just basically call him a bitch the whole training camp. Just be like, this man was licking off your body.
Like that the ridicule that Mr. Skinny could put on Deontay Wilder over the course of an entire training camp, that is game-changing, Brian. I mean, that would light a fire under almost anyone's ass, hearing Mr. Skinny say he licked your neck and you didn't do anything about it. The motivation would be there. And Teddy, of course, is a very strong motivator as well. So to get a little more serious about Wilder, and shout out to our friends on the Showtime Boxing Podcast. Eric Raskin was with us last week and Kieran Mulvaney. They had Stephen Breadman Edwards, Julian Williams' trainer on, talking about Wilder earlier this week. And Breadman was saying, and it's a good point, he says, no one has been in camp with these guys, and we don't know. They could be overachieving with Wilder. Wilder may be a guy who is stubborn, doesn't want to learn, is hard to teach, is what, you know, and we have seen Wilder get better over the years. And through all that, they have gotten, you know, Jay Diaz and Mark Breland have gotten Wilder to an Olympic bronze medal, to a, you know, and of course, matchmaking played a role in the 44, 43 fights with no losses until Wilder Fury 2 all of that, he's basically saying, we don't know for sure. I mean, we can tell that Wilder is not a skillful fighter, but we don't know that anyone would necessarily do better. That doesn't mean that someone couldn't, but it's worth thinking about because, you know, Mark Breland probably hasn't been in there for years saying, yeah, champ, that's how you do it, right? I mean, they didn't bring him in there to do nothing, and the man knows how to fight and fight in a style with a body that, you know, looked on a smaller scale a lot like Deontay Wilder's.
What a beauty, by the way. Hashtag body.
Hashtag.
Speaking of JD's.
Did Washington get at you yesterday?
These nuts.
Stop that. What's the DMX equivalent to that? It was, B-U-F-ing him. It was the intro to, I'm politicking with my chicken, wondering if I'm a creeper. Little hood rat B from 25th named Taniqua coming through like I do, you know, getting my.
What type of games are being played? How's it going down?
Is there an intro in there that's very similar?
I never bought that CD.
Wow. It's dark.
I was resistant to DMX.
No.
I disavow this opinion. I disavow this opinion. At the time, I was like, I was too underground. I was in Fat Beats, man. I was like, yeah, no, I'm listening to Ruckus.
Okay.
Yo, Mos Def, Talib Kweli, Shabam Sadiq. That's the arsonist. That's where I was at in those days. I should have made more love, made more room in my heart for DMX because I really like that song. How's it going down? I really like, Stop Being Greedy is one of my favorite songs ever. And he's just better than I gave him credit for. So I got the score wrong.
Well, I appreciate you taking that L in front of us, a big L. But here's the deal. Like, if I'm the guy, I'm the commercial rap fan. I'm the guy who should be like, Rafe, you should give Ja Rule a harder look, man. He was great. And then you're the guy who's supposed to be like, Ja Rule ain't nothing, man. He's a bootleg DMX. Second of all, you're going to need two plumbers to get it, pricey. Third of all, he's from Yonkers, DMX. He's the real Rafe. How could you not own It's Dark and Hell is Hot, 1998? I had the poster up in my first apartment.
I just explained it. I was very, very up in this image of myself as an underground hip-hop head. Like, I wanted and I remember hearing.
Man, chicks don't want to hear that.
People
Check
arguing
later.
In. I was in Fat Beats shopping for 12-inch records, singles. I put that on a. I want a 12-inch of that.
Hold on. While the joke is still in my mind.
Yeah, but I mean, I want an 11-inch penis. It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Although
not
you're.
Not going to happen.
Although the room at your dad's a place is still a relic to 90s hip hop. There's no DMX in there.
No, there is not. I'm sorry. Again, I got the score wrong on that one. I was influenced by my peer group who was like, nah, you know, see, if Ja Rule was a bootleg DMX, I remember hearing someone say this. DMX was a bootleg 9. Do you remember 9?
No.
What you want, 9?
Lisa Loeb and 9 Stories.
What you want, 9? An ill posse and my name up in lights and I and E. He didn't really have DMX's flow, but he had a very similar gruff voice.
He's still alive, Rafe. He's from the Bronx. He does hardcore hip hop. His name is Derek Keys, also known as Ricochet or 9MM.
Is that the 9 I was talking about?
Yeah, 9 from the Bronx, right? Hardcore hip hop.
There's so many different rappers could be named 9.
He was a featured guest on Funkmaster Flex's 6 Million Ways to Die.
Sounds right. Yeah, we found him. That's my man, Funk. Master Flex Night.
Okay, thank you.
Go Flex.
I thought we could bring out to DMX's first album together. I don't go that deep. I don't get that hard. Okay, I'm 41 years old. Yeah.
Hi, Mrs. Campbell.
That is true. Wow.
Just look at the stiffness.
Well, that was a short conversation.
And the frequency.
the frequency, not that frequent. All right. Wow. I was going somewhere. I know I was. What were we talking about? How did we get here?
Interludes on albums, the lead in to How's It Going Down on the DMX album.
No, boxing. Boxing.
Oh, yeah, but I'm trying to backtrack to where we were.
Sorry.
You know, Brian, I could, you know, take a dump in a box and mark it guaranteed, but and then sell it to you, but it's got to be your box.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be indeed. All right, I need to recircle. The 2020 class of the Boxing Hall of Fame, among everything else postponing.
Yeah, actually, I'll see you in Canastota. I love Canastota.
Actually took it a big step forward by combining it now with the class of 2021. So what that means is for boxing heads, the hardcores, not the regular fans, a pilgrimage may be needed next year, but it's kind of weird, right? They're just like, 2020, not happening. Sorry. You down with that?
That's kind of smart. I think that makes sense. What else are they going to do? I guess they could try and, because if you start, you get into the game of postponing, then it just, it keeps getting pushed down the line, one month, the next month, the next month. And then all of a sudden it's happening 2 months before the next one is supposed to happen. And people have to make plans to come in from all around the world for that. So I think it's a smart move.
Have you seen Rick Lazor's return to Twitter and his allegations that Dan Rayfield's recent story updates on the New York Boxing Hall of Fame class this year, which includes famous matchmaker promoter Rick Lazor, that Rayfield's been purposely keeping his name out of the stories to hold the grudge, a deeper grudge than the $25,000 that DiBella still owes Glazer, and that Glazer is now attacking Rayfield's size again on social media after pre-coronavirus he had said, I'm no longer going to take shots at my enemies.
Glazer, did he say that?
Yeah,
Glazer said that.
Glazer called a ceasefire on Twitter
during the coronavirus.
Yes.
because he didn't want to get caught like saying bad things about someone a week before they died.
Because we need to come together. Okay.
That's why. Full disclaimer, Brian, I have not read every single story I haven't read a single story that Dan nor anyone has written about the New York 2020 Hall of Fame induction. Who got in? Who's I don't care.
Okay.
All right. I won't be there. It's not going to happen anyway. But Brian, if you've read it, did Dan list every single person who's going to get in there?
I didn't go that deep.
Because if he didn't list every single one of them, then I don't know if Glazer's argument holds up. Because I know we love us some Glazer. I love me some Saul Glazanello Alvarez.
You got glazed. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. He's a part of the boxing Twitter world, but he is not newsworthy. In an article, nobody know, like a person reading an article does not know who that is.
Maybe I didn't go too deep in their beef.
You slipper the hot beef injection.
In other news, Anthony Yard, British boxer, light heavyweight, lost to Sergey Kovalev. His father passed due to corona. I think that that sucks. That sucks, Rafe. R.I.P. Yeah. Shout out to the Yard family. This is going to keep happening, Rafe. People we know. I did want to update you from Filipino corona news. Manny Pacquiao, the Filipino icon, has tested negative.
Yes, he did.
And he basically was like, I'm ready to die and nobody can save me. He said he'll be willing to take that ultimate L for the cause, Rafe.
What is the cause exactly?
To help others get through this virus.
Why does him getting coronavirus and dying help anyone else?
It's a fair comeback. Did you see how reckless, by the way, Dana White has been in these interviews he's doing? Did you hear him on the Frank Warren pod and on other places where he's basically like...
The Frank Warren has a pod?
Yes, and Dana was a guest on yesterday. I'm thinking that
like
they talk
UK Frank Warren looks like Michael Caine Frank Warren.
They kept referencing how long they've been friends and how they keep hanging out in Vegas. I think this is my personal two cents, okay? I think that Dana's last potential play to get into boxing, because he loves Fury so much, is to try to co-promote Fury with Frank Warren after the ESPN Top Rank deal ends. That's my guess in terms of why they're chummy and they're boys, right? Because there's no other play. Dana told Kevin Ioli last week of Yahoo that, like, boxing's too corrupt. I can't get into it. It's blah, blah, blah. Well, dude, we all knew that. We all saw that coming. Like, we all, you know, whatever. But the whole point of my point here is that Dana's been so reckless that he's basically like, look, we're all going to die anyway. You know, we're going to catch cancer or get a heart attack. So if it's my time with corona, it's my time, but I'm not going to run from it. I ain't afraid of it. Bring it on, corona. I don't think you should speak that into a mirror three times, right?
It's really irresponsible, especially for anyone with a large platform like these people. You know, Ahern, he has a platform. The Zone, they have a platform. Don't do that if you have a platform. It's also, even if you don't have a platform, I wouldn't say that under any circumstances. Even if some part of me even believed it, I'm too superstitious to say something like that. This reminds me of Predator. Billy walking out onto that bridge with just a knife, carving that X on his chest.
Yes.
And then saying, you know, come on. And then 3 seconds later, you see like the spike come out of Predator's arm and he goes, you're not going to win that fight.
Hey, Billy, Native American chief, you asked for it. Okay. And Dana, look, bro, get off that bridge. Stop doing these interviews. In fact, like, go grab something to eat.
Go to the grocery stores. For crying out loud, go to the grocery stores. If you want to go to Bob Evans and eat, go to Bob
do
Evans
it.
And eat.
No, wait, don't do that.
Get some takeout from Bob Evans.
Don't die.
Please don't die. Please don't die. Be different, Dana.
To close on the latest news in boxing, Rafe, breaking news out of the Campbell household. Now, here's the deal. The wife and I don't really have the same taste on a lot of movies or TVs or shows, but she's actually a big fan of here's an example of a movie she has on DVD.
Pinoy Hoops.
What's that, Chris Tucker and
CNN
Jackie Chan?
CNN Hoop Nation, all of the documentaries hosted by Bartholomew.
Bakung Kong. What's that soap opera?
Bakeng Kong.
Bakeng Kong.
If he was a girl, you would say he has a badonkadonk.
Well, no. Okay, so what was that Chris Tucker, Jackie Chan franchise?
Rush Hour.
Yeah, she's like into that. She likes the Fast and the Furiouses. Remember you and I talked about this briefly when we brought up the great Fred Raskin, who was the editor on Tokyo Drift?
Yes.
And so the other week and a half ago, I tweeted about this. You know, it was a Corona night, family in, we're watching TV. She's like, hey, let's watch Fast and Furious 1. And I'm like, no. That is a no-no, Frank Cappuccino. And then I did it. Cracked a couple IPAs. Family got involved. And you know what? I didn't hate it. I watched number one, and I didn't hate it. So then suddenly, wife starts DVRing every other one in the franchise as there's coming by. We missed two. Too Fast, Too Furious.
Two is the worst. Although it does have your favorite rapper Ja Rule in it.
Well, that's going to be DVR'd tomorrow night. We're going to get that. But last night we watched The Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, which is the third volume that has that guy that you mentioned, the white dude.
Lucas Black, is that his name?
Lucas Black from Friday Night Lights, right?
Yes.
I shamelessly love the crap out of this. Two entries in, and I don't know if it's just because Fred Raskin's editing got me, but this was awesome.
I'm a diehard Tokyo Drift man. That is where I enjoyed the films that came after. Now I'm getting a little tired of the shtick.
How many have you seen?
It was pure.
How many have you seen?
I have seen them all except for Hobbs and Shaw, the one that just came out, which I didn't. I watched like some of them, fell asleep.
Which one is your favorite? Which one, knowing that we like
Tokyo
some of
Tokyo Drift, man. That's
really
it. Yes.
I loved it. I absolutely love it.
You'll like the next ones are good. The Rock shows up. They remain good pretty much up until
John Cena
the crazy what Paul Walker like hologram death at the end of, you know, then after that one is the next two or three after that is when they devolve into just kind of ridiculousness, like all the ridiculousness in that franchise.
So if I've read it right, the fourth one, 2009's Fast and Furious, is essentially the direct sequel to the first one. Is that correct?
I don't even know. Is that supposed to be the case?
Because it's got,
yeah,
it's got Vin
right.
and
yeah.
Paul back together. They got the duo back.
Right. Yeah. They brought it. Yeah, it's true. And but then some of the, you know, one of the dudes from Tokyo Drift shows up eventually, and like there's stuff they bring in the other worlds. You know what? If you're into these movies, I suggest a couple lesser kind of knockoffs that came out over the years. Torque. which I believe has Ice Cube, Biker Boys with a Z, which has one of the guys from Coach Carter in it.
I don't know how far down the food chain of tolerance I'll have for this.
Look,
but,
these are the same movies except with motorcycles. Think about that.
All right, but the characters in Tokyo Drift, I can't believe we're giving this much time to it, but were fantastic. DK, I'm not talking Donkey Kong.
Drift King.
This guy's a badass wannabe gangster. And how about Han? Han's the hero of this flick, right?
Han is great.
And did you connect with the pops? Why is that dad living in such a small space? And was that a prostitute in that opening Tokyo scene? When
it might have been. It might have been. I think the father is a vet, right? He's a hardened, I guess Vietnam veteran. Just wanted to get out and be to himself. You know, there are a lot of guys. There are guys like that in the Philippines too.
So I'm not saying we need to do a Tokyo Drift, all action rewind pod, but due to this connection of Fred Raskin, why am I not having Fred Raskin on to give me the inside scoop on FNF Tokyo Drift?
I don't know if, as the editor of the film, he would really be able to ply you with the great stories there, Brian. I think it more just like he would be, well, I was sitting in this editing suite and they sent me the files and I put it all together. I thought it was a crappy movie because I usually work with Quentin Tarantino, but they paid me well, so I did the job.
No. It did exist. There's deeper elements there. Okay, we both know it did exist. There's got to be some.
You think that like Bow Wow is in there with him?
No. I don't think he's on set or anything. But I think he's got a. He would know, by the way, if that lady was a prostitute. So what I'm saying is, he may be our definitive question answerer.
Every question you've wanted to know about Tokyo Drift and Nick Lachey's second wife.
Well, does DK appear again in the series?
No, Han does.
But Han's dead.
Come back. I don't remember how they explain all this stuff. Wait, I'm pretty sure it's Han who comes back.
All right. Speaking of coming back, he's never left, and don't call it a comeback. In fact, he'll be here for years. It's the grandpa. It's Bob Arum. Rafe, full disclosure on the space-time continuum. I haven't interviewed him yet, but I will right now. Any questions you want me to ask him since I'm going to interview him right now? 1.21 gigawatts, 1955?
Just a lot about MMA.
Okay. That's fair. It's the Hall of Famer that's a promoter. Oh, you know Bob Arum, the promoter. Yes, the journalist. Coming at you right now. Enjoy.
Brian, Bob, you both there?
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Bob Arum, the legend, the Hall of Famer, the 88-year-old chief of staff when it comes to boxing. Bob, always a pleasure to have you on CBS Sports. How are you holding up during these crazy times?
Well, Brian, doing the best I can, realizing that there's nothing I can do to dramatically change what's happening in the country, in the world. But I'm listening to the instructions. I'm staying at home, watching television like I never watched before, particularly all these streaming services like Disney Plus and Netflix and Hulu and Prime. There's so much great stuff on that I wouldn't have watched before because I wouldn't have had the time. Now all I have is time.
I hear you.
And so I'm watching it. And people ask me what plans I'm making for these fights. When we get the all clear, and because I don't know when the all clear is going to be, and I have no idea whether it will be in 2 months or 3 months or maybe the rest of the year, I'm not making any plans right now. When this thing looks like it's clearing up, we'll start making plans.
That's where we're all at, Bob. So it's good to hear that you are doing your part. Now, look, Bob, You're a legend in boxing, but in life too. You were born into the Great Depression. You came of age during World War II. You were a grown man during Vietnam. How do you sort of compare the sort of, I guess, the fear, the unknown of this corona pandemic compared to other things you've lived and survived?
Well, you know, as far as the Second World War is concerned, which at that particular point in time, I was 9 or 10 years old when America became involved, when Pearl Harbor was bombed. It was right before my 10th birthday. And I remember we were in school, elementary school there, and the Pearl Harbor was on a Sunday in the United States. And on Monday, when we went to school, they had us all go home. And I remember my sister and I hiding under the beds because we were sure we were going to be bombed.
Wow. Like,
that was going to help us. So there was a lot of fear in the beginning. And then we sort of adjusted to the fact that we had to all wear special tags, plastic tags, because if, in effect, we were bombed, they would be able to identify us. And air raid drills and drills in school where we sat in the halls during these drills. I remember that all that distinctively, but there was nothing like this. There was nothing. There was rationing, I remember. You couldn't eat meat every day. You had coupons where you could buy an allotment of meat. But nothing like this. This is something that you have such an invisible enemy, something that can hit an area, hit a population in no time, that we haven't really experienced it.
Yeah, indeed. Well put, Bob. And while we're all sort of waiting around to see what happens, you did have a little bit of a celebration milestone this week, celebrating 54 years as a boxing promoter. March 29th, 1966 in Toronto, Ali Chavalo. Talk about a big-time fight to get your feet wet. 54 years later, Bob, how do you sort of do you remember the details of that day specifically?
You're damn right I do. But you know, when you talk about that milestone 54 years ago, I was hoping to celebrate it in Quebec, Canada. We had a fight scheduled with Beterbiev and the Chinese challenger on March 28th in Quebec. That obviously got postponed. I remember the Chavalo fight in Canada. It was the first fight that I ever saw it started out as Ali and Terrell, and then became Chavalo. We got thrown out of the country, and the guy who co-owned the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Maple Leaf Garden had a buyout, Conn Smythe, who wouldn't let Ali in the building, and we did that fight, and it was such a relief for me to be able to do that fight with all the adversary that we encountered.
That's a cool story. You promoted or co-promoted 27 Muhammad Ali fights over your career. I remember asking you in the past, which fighter were you ever the closest with in terms of a relationship, a friendship? And you had mentioned Manny Pacquiao, but what was your relationship like with Ali outside the ring?
Well, it was very, very, you know, Ali was one of the most gracious people that I've ever met. He was very warm and wonderful to be associated with. But I wasn't that close to him because I was close to him, but Ali was caught up in those days with religion and other things that I didn't participate in. I ended up closer to George Foreman during Foreman's comeback than I had ever been with Ali. Not that I didn't love Ali and not that he wasn't tremendous to me, but I would never say that he was my buddy.
You did share a very important weekend with Ali, though, Bob, that time in the Philippine Garden Hotel. That's the stuff of legend. The orgy lasted for days, Bob. No,
Ali didn't participate in that.
Bob, all these...
Ali stated... No, Ali was in another hotel.
All these years later...
He didn't participate in that.
Do we have any...
I had my own orgy in the Philippine Garden.
Do we have any statistics, Bob, all these years later? How many women? How many?
It was a lot, man. It was a lot. In those days, you know, I wasn't exactly an 88-year-old guy, so I had a lot of staying power.
Indeed. Bob, 54 years as a boxing promoter. Is there anything you're most proud of when it comes to your legacy?
Well, yeah, I'm proud of the careers of so many great fighters that I guided, you know, from Hagler to Oscar De La Hoya to Mayweather to Manny Pacquiao. And, you know, recently the Terence Crawford and Lomachenko and guys like that. Every fighter's career, particularly if they're successful, has the hand of a promoter behind it. Now, the promoters don't often stay for an entire fighter's career. I did, I know, with Hagler, but it's still, you had influence and you made a contribution, and that remains with you forever.
You mentioned it's not, you know, normal for a fighter to stay his whole career with one guy. When that breakup happens, you know, you had famously split ways with both Oscar and Floyd, for example. Is there a part of you that always looks back at that as like an ex-wife or like, you know, how hard is that when you work so much to build a guy and then he decides to go elsewhere?
Well, it's maybe a little hard in the beginning, but afterwards you remember all that you did and with the athlete and how the athlete prospered and enhanced himself with your direction. And you remember, I think, all of the good things that happened. And what happened after that becomes less important. So I look back on my career with Oscar and with Floyd with joy, with pride, and I don't dwell on the fact that there was a breakup with both of them because I don't believe there was anything personal in it.
Very well said. Before coming to boxing, Bob, your great legacy in life, you worked as an attorney in the U.S. Department of Justice during the Kennedy administration. Did you know John and Bobby? What was your relationship with them?
I didn't know John. I had met him. But Bobby, I worked with on particularly one case. And Bobby always... often came, is a better word, to the Southern District in Manhattan to meet with Morgenthau, who is my boss, Bob Morgenthau, or Vince Broderick, who was the chief assistant, and when it was a tax matter, myself. So I interacted with Bobby, who I found to be a tremendous, tremendous person, a really electric kind of guy. But I didn't, unfortunately, I didn't really know John that well. I mean, I knew him from afar, but I didn't have any interaction with the president, but I did frequently with Bobby.
Do you have a final verdict on the ending of JFK's life? Everybody always tries to debate who did it. Bob, who did it? You were close to the situation.
Oswald did it. But you know, after he was the president was killed, and they had a report, the Warren Commission report, and it was an extensive exploration of the situation regarding the president's death. And based on my reading of that, and the reason I read it so carefully, the Warren report, is Doubleday, which was a big publishing house, had retained a senior partner of my law firm. I was back in private practice at that point, named Louis Neiser, and he was retained to write a foreword about the report. So that required research into the report, and he handed it off to me. So that's why I became really familiar with the investigation into the president's assassination. And that's when I became convinced that it was Oswald. And I also became convinced and believe it to this day that Oswald was working as an agent of the Cuban government under Fidel Castro to assassinate the president.
Interesting. Interesting, Bob. Going with Oswald. Very interesting. So much I could ask you about, Bob, but speaking of presidents, UFC president Dana White, Bob, he's the only guy who won't listen to any of the government warnings, the crackdowns on public gatherings. He is determined to put on this UFC card on April 18th, no matter who fights or where the location is. He's the last man standing that won't give up the fight. What are your thoughts on that? Is it you're a promoter in the same sort of footsteps. Is this reckless, like his critics are saying, or is this something you think he can pull off?
He ought to be ashamed of himself with what's going on in this country and the world with this virus. The last thing we need is for an event to take place with no spectators, just to get the event to take place. But the truth is, Dana White is somebody with a flawed intelligence. I mean, as witnessed by the fact that he's one of the chief supporters of our incompetent president.
Will he get any pushback from ESPN? Will the government step in? Look, he's got his own fighters that are having problems getting on airplanes. Joe Rogan, the commentator, says he won't travel for an event like this. Do you think he's going to ultimately be forced to not move forward with the card?
He's not going to move forward with the card. And if the card happens with people dying in hospitals all over the United States, he ought to be ashamed of himself. The message should be stay home, stand down, until this is over. Let's not spread the virus. Let's control the virus. Let's do what we can to staff these hospitals so we take care of people who go into intensive care. Let's all be big people, big boys about it, and stop the grandstanding. This will end when it ends, and it'll end quicker if we all stick together and do what we're supposed to do. not go and shout from the rafters that I'm not a pussy. I'm going to put this fight on. I don't care. That is absolutely the wrong message to send.
Bob, Dana has teased a long time that he was going to get into boxing with this Zuffa boxing idea. This week he was on a bunch of podcasts. He said, I don't know if I can because boxing is so screwed up. I can't get anything to work or anyone to work with me. You think this is like a grand opening, grand closing situation that there's no future in boxing for Dana?
Look, Dana has been a good promoter for UFC. But again, UFC is a monopoly. He tells the fighters who they're going to fight, when they're going to fight, pays them very little as against what professional boxers get. So he's a monopolist. And it's not easy for a monopolist to go into a sport like boxing, which is anti-monopolist, where we have very little barriers of entry. We have a lot of promoters, some big promoters, some medium promoters, everybody looking to promote for the best way that they can for themselves. And Dana White could not exist in that type of milieu. He only can exist in an atmosphere where he is the dominant monopolistic person, where he's manager, promoter, everything, rules maker, for the participants. I'm telling you, there is something about the operation of the UFC which is a violation of federal law. Now, you can't do that in boxing because of the Muhammad Ali Act, which for reasons only known to him, doesn't apply to UFC. Why? I don't know. But the Muhammad Ali Act at least gives rights to fighters, to managers, and prevents a monopoly-like situation.
That's a fair breakdown right there. Do you have any fears that he would join forces with Al Haymon and try to bring their powers together to try to take over the sport?
No, I don't have any fears because Haymon works differently. Haymon is not a monopolist. Haymon realized when he tried to take over boxing, where he had that deal with the mutual fund, that it's impossible under the laws and circumstances to monopolize boxing. So no, I don't think that Haymon would join with him. And after all, Al does so many good fights for Fox and Showtime and Dana and the UFC are tied to ESPN.
Yeah,
so that wouldn't work.
Well, speaking of that deal you did with Al, you brought together ESPN and Fox for Wilder Fury 2. Such a great promotion and fight. Were you happy with the end game in terms of the numbers, pay-per-view buys, all of that, considering the incredible amount of promotion the two networks put in?
Well, you always hope for bigger numbers than you actually get. But I think we did quite well. I think everybody was pleased with the result. ESPN has done the rerun of both fights, number one and number two, and got good ratings for that. So we all look forward when this thing is over to getting ready and do the third fight. The cooperation between ESPN and Fox was amazing how they worked together. And that was, I think, helped as a template for Al and myself and our companies, because PBC and Top Rank work seamlessly together to promote the event. So I look forward to the third fight. When it'll happen, where it'll happen, I have no idea. We'll have to see. But when it does, it'll get a lot of attention.
Now, your guy is Tyson Fury, who you co-promote. But is there part of you that is cheering for a better performance out of Wilder in the third fight for, you know, marketing purposes, for the maybe a future fight between them even after this?
I'm not going to bully you. My guy is Tyson Fury. As long as Wilder shows up, I hope he doesn't improve on the second fight, because I'd like to see my guy make it even easier. So, no, I ain't rooting for Wilder to be better than he was in the second fight.
Bob, in terms of one of your fights that we won't know when it's going to happen, obviously, until the pandemic slows down, is Teofimo Lopez, Vasily Lomachenko, lightweight unification. It's probably the fight I would be most excited for this year to see out of any. I can't figure out if Teofimo's not going to be the next big star in the sport. Bob, he's got balls. He's brash. How do you keep this guy?
Let me tell you a funny story. So Loma was in California getting ready for the fight when it became obvious that it wouldn't happen because of this pandemic. And he was afraid that they were going to shut down Ukraine. So he flew back to the Ukraine to continue training. Meanwhile, Teofimo got bored with hanging out in New York. And so he and his wife went to Jonesboro, Arkansas, so he could train there in probably better surroundings. So Arkansas hasn't been hit yet by the pandemic, but as you saw last week, they got hit by a tornado.
Wow.
And we call it Tornado Loma. It almost reached where Teofimo was staying, but it didn't. So that was sort of an amusing development.
You know what I love about that fight the most, Bob, is we just don't know what it will look like. Do you have that same feeling? Do you feel in your gut you know who would win that? Or are even you like, yeah, this is 50-50. Let's roll the dice. Let's see what happens.
Well, again, it would depend on who showed up the day of the fight. Because I can see Loma winning that fight and winning it handily. On the other hand, I can also see Teofimo with that amazing power and will being too much for Loma to contemplate, because Teofimo is a lot more unorthodox than the fighters that Loma been used to fighting.
True. Can't wait to see that. Bob, it's been great chatting with you. I want to close with this. 54 years in the business. I feel like we can always learn something from you, Bob. What's the best piece of advice?
Well, the best piece of advice is what I think I gave myself, which is you get knocked down a lot in life, but you got to keep fighting and you keep getting up and you don't quit and you come back stronger than ever. You don't let despair take over your life. These are tough times that people are living through. My advice is for them to toughen it out, to do what they should do, to take care of themselves and their families, and to follow the instructions, to stand down, and we'll beat this virus if we get together and all do the right thing. Don't quit. Don't despair. We're going to beat it if we all pull together.
Amazing. Love it, Bob. 54 years. It's not over. Top Rank still moving, still on top of the game. Can't wait to see these fights when they happen. Bob, thanks so much for your time.
Good to talk to you, Brian.
Take care. All right, Rafe, special thanks to Bob Arum. Haven't heard it yet, but I'm sure it's awesome.
Bob never fails. I am 100% confident that this is going to be another classic interview. So you don't even need to, you already know he's the best.
I asked him if we could get him on the regular, if we could get him on contract, Rafe, to be on here, like, you know.
It's going to be a challenge.
Every, you know, couple months. And then, of course, he said, what I can't find, Rafe. He said, what I can't, oh, here it is.
We don't believe in
Thanks, hey, Bob. Hey, Bob. Okay, thank you. Rafe, let's close the show with some fun. So here's the deal. It is quarantine season. Yes, you could be watching Ozark on Netflix. Season 3 is up right now. You in it?
I've never watched a single episode of Ozark. Right. I know some people like it. I've heard other people say it's a little overrated.
Did you like it? I love it.
Oh, great.
Gracias. Gracias. Yeah. Let me put some water on your balls. Eric, bow, chick, chick, boom, chick. Let me put some water on your balls. Bow, chick, chick,
chick, chick. Come on, let me put some water on your balls.
Look, it's not easy to be quarantined, to be home, to be stuck, you know, especially if you're not working, all this stuff. Rafe, we want to give the people an out here. I'm not looking for your 5 favorite fights ever. I'm not looking for your 5 greatest fights ever. I'm just looking for 5 fights our fans could and should be watching to fill the time for action, entertainment, ridiculousness, historical, whatever you got, 5 fun fights, little under the radar, so to speak, maybe a reminder of what's out there. We each got 5. We can alternate. Rafe, do you want to go first?
Sure. I will start us off.
Number 5. What do you got for me?
My number 5. And Brian, this is a fight that is not that, and you don't have to go way back into the time machine to check this one out, but it was one that I don't think had any US TV. And you know me, you already know where I'm heading with this. It's those cruiserweights, the 200-pound blokes.
Yes.
And they met on December 3rd, 2016 in the Khodinka Ice Palace in Moscow, Russia. It was the co-main of the Edward Troyanowski getting one-shotted by the great Julius Ndongo. But the right before that, my man, Dennis Rubadub Lebedev, shout out to the great Bill Detloff, fought Murat Gassiev.
Ooh.
And that fight that's a super underrated cruiserweight fight. Lebedev, it was basically his last stand, and he fought like it, and really outboxed Gassiev for long stretches of fight, threw the kitchen sink at this guy. And Gassiev, you know him, he just liked to train and he just liked to fight. And that's what he did. And he eventually, you know, he got a late knockdown and did enough to win. And it was just such a beast in that. And that was when he won the title. But that's a fun one. And it's not in a great fight, but it's a very, very good one.
And that's a Russian passing of the torch of cruiserweight glory, correct?
Indeed, indeed. Although I think that, you know, Gassiev is like a Ossetian. He's from near Dagestan, near sort of the part of Russia that the Russians discriminate against, along with like Khabib. So I think that the Russian power structure prefers Denis Lebedev, who is this insane, very militaristic national, like he's always doing stuff with the Russian paratroopers. That's why he would wear that crazy blue Guile from Street Fighter beret into the ring. And when he wears like what looks like a weird striped French sailor, like wife beater shirt, it's actually another part of the Russian paratrooper training uniform. So
it looks like a swimming shirt that an adult male would wear during like a 1960s Disney movie.
Yes, that is the Denis Lebedev look, except with a giant potato head on top. Yet he brings it all together. Anyway, Lebedev is basic, like he's cast himself as Russian G.I. Joe. And Gassiev is just sort of the Zangief from parts unknown. And that's it just makes for a fun fight. I recommend it.
We love ourselves some Gassiev on the show because he's all business.
I don't like cameras, interview. I like training and fighting.
And beef and meat and in double kebab, indeed. Well,
you know that he didn't say that. The man who beat him.
Oh, he said, "Hi, my Russian fans. Hi, my sit with me on plane, please." Yes, okay. Riff, I don't know if I've seen this fight. Now, it didn't air in the States. Did I catch a stream for that? So late.
Probably
stop-
not.
Late stoppage for Gassiev. You know what?
No, not late stoppage. Just a decision. But it was there's a late knockdown.
I will practice what I preach. I will this week watch this fight to fill my corona hole, Rafe. Thank you very much. All right. Good choice to open us out. My number five pick, Rafe. We got to go all the way back to July 23rd, 2004. I did not watch this fight live, but a couple years later, my first job at ESPN, I worked for the mobile ESPN, the damn phone. Remember that? And then they were the originators on like, we need to get a backlog of digital content on demand so that when people subscribe to our service, they can find it. I was tasked with going through old Friday night fights from the ESPN tape library and making what they called classic boxing episodes in which I'd pull 2 to 3 fights and have Jim Baskwell of future ESPN Making the Rounds fame voice intros and outros that I would write and queue up. I found this sloppy heavyweight brawl that I regularly go back on YouTube every once in a while. Do you remember the first meeting? Don't watch the rematch. The rematch is like Caddyshack 2. The first meeting between Brian Minto and Vinny Matalone. You remember Vinny Matalone? Remember these two white, kind of husky, kind of muscular heavyweights who had this barroom freaking brawl at the Trump Taj Mahal in Atlantic City on ESPN's Friday Night Fights? Both guys went down multiple times, and Brian Minto finally stopped Vinny Matalone in round 10, the final round. Do you remember this fight? It's great, Rafe.
I don't think I've seen it, Brian. I might have to go digging in the crates for this.
There's so much personality in this fight. It's just two stocky white guys.
I thought you were gonna go for the more recent Spilka Molo.
Yes.
One that was on ESPN Friday Night Fights as well.
Was that one of those at Comiskey Park, maybe? Or at
definitely in Chicago. Might have been at USC Pavilion.
Yeah. Do you remember Brian Minto, undersized heavyweight?
I remember both of these guys, but very hazily.
So Minto was always an opponent for like the Chris Areola types, would go to Europe and fight known heavyweights, name heavyweights. And Matalone was just a rough and tumble journeyman, but he ended up fighting Evander Holyfield late in his career and got sent to hell.
That's probably why I know the name, but it's like,
get some of that white slop. What do you got for number four, Rafe?
So, not quite white slop, but a little bit of half white. Not slop, white blood. So for a couple of these next two fights, and I'll go one at a time, but then these next two, for me, were about comfort. We're about seeing some of my favorite fighters on not like their obviously best nights or most significant nights, but just watching them perform well in tough enough fights. And just getting the experience. And this is about getting the Maravilla experience.
Yes.
Sergio Martinez, when he won the lineal middleweight championship of the world against Kelly Pavlik, the Ghost.
With the Burger King crown at the end, right?
Well, did he do – I think the Burger King crown was introduced
in the Williams.
When after he knocked out Paul Williams in the second fight.
Yes.
But maybe not. But that happened before this anyway, right?
Yes.
So he's got the Burger King crown. So Martinez, Pavlik, 2010, April 17, Boardwalk Hall, Atlantic City. It's got basically prime Sergio against a still very, like, very good Kelly Pavlik, not best form Kelly Pavlik, but still very good. Still had the middleweight belt, even though he's coming off the loss to B-Hop. And it's just got a little bit of everything you like to see. It's got the lateral movement. It's got the sneaky, southpaw, like ducking his shoulder and getting out the way shot. It's got the obligatory flash knockdown, which happens in almost every Sergio Martinez fight. And he has to fight back from behind.
Didn't he get in trouble late?
He was starting, Pavlik believes that he was starting to turn the tide. He'd basically gotten the timing down and was going to take over late. And then the cuts happened.
Yes.
Then,
were you a part of that Pavlik interview that we did for this podcast in like the media room?
In Vegas.
He told a great story about that fight. It's all coming back to me now that he had come back too quickly from an injury and he wasn't in the best shape and he took the fight anyway, so to speak. I mean, everybody's got that story afterwards, but, yeah, that was great. That fight was fun. It wasn't a great fight, but it was fun theater that night to see if Sergio had it. He had it, Rafe.
Yeah, and I get to see my guy get the lineal crown that he went on to defend many times until, you know what, until whatever BS equilibrium shot happened in the garden that
Campeon,
night.
My campeon, champion.
It was the knee, man. The knee was not responding.
Don't forget,
he didn't even deserve to beat Martin Murray in Argentina.
No,
come on,
no,
man.
You're right. Martin Murray got screwed that night. And by the way, that was sideways rain. Maravilla should not have taken that fight. Remember how we found out afterwards he was like real injured in that fight, and but felt so much pressure from HBO and everybody else that like this was this Argentina homecoming built around him that he had to do it. That was a wild night. Somebody should do a maybe not a 30 for 30. Maybe you should come up with like 5 for 5, just short little like bad idea. Don't do
that. I would be interested in that. I don't know if the people who control the resources at these major sports organizations want to pour that into a fight between Sergio Martinez and Martin Murray that probably even most boxing fans have forgotten about, but I'm there for it.
I would not only watch it, I would do GH Bay beforehand to just spice up the broadcast. Thank you. Great pick right there. Always fun reliving that fight. My number 4, another one of these fights that was a premier fight, but I think people forget how great it was. June 17th, 2006, the FedEx Forum in Memphis for 2 pairs of that middleweight crown, the WBC and the WBO, when Jermaine Taylor, pre-Crazy Eyes, fought Ronald Winky Wright on HBO to a dramatic draw. We never got the rematch, and Dan Rayfield wrote about it for years, joking about how much money Winky Wright turned down for that. But Rafe, that fight was one where it was absolute prime Winky Wright coming off of the Trinidad walkthrough, moving up to middleweight, and still top of the mountain at whatever he had left as peak Jermaine Taylor before he fell into some trouble in his career. And do you remember we thought that was going to be more of a defensive, potentially boring fight? And then Winky got caught early. His eye got a little bit messed up. And he bit down and started fighting. And to have 2 guys, very elite, top 10 pound for pound, just go for it. And then the fight be that great. And then be a draw. Dude, I remember working a late shift at ESPN that night, watching it, just going sick. Love that fight. No one, it's like it never happened. People never talk about it, Rafe.
I think most of Jermaine Taylor's career before everything went off the rails is sort of swept under the rug now because it is, you know, he's had so many problems outside of the ring after, you know, his career that I kind of understand why that happens, but it's a shame because he was a very good fighter, even though I thought Hopkins beat him. And this fight was awesome. I remember I was in the Philippines when this happened. I was I was in the middle of nowhere on a pretty small island with eating in a shop on plastic tables, eating squid adobo with huge whole peppercorns in it that kept getting stuck in my mouth. Yeah. And the squid was delicious. The peppercorns were causing a problem. And meanwhile, on the screen there, I'm watching Winky Wright and Jermaine Taylor. And I stayed long after I had finished my meal because I wanted to see what happened in this fight.
So they would regularly have American big time, like HBO level fights on, like in a restaurant in the Philippines?
Yeah, it's just whatever was on TV. And so, you know, it would be the live fights would be Sunday morning, Saturday night here. It's 12 or 13 hours ahead, depending on the time of year in the Philippines. And especially in that era, because it was, you know, 2006, the heart of Pacquiao craze. And when he was the most exciting, when he was about to start climbing the weight classes and really becoming this whole other stratospheric superstar. In those years, there was they just put all the HBO boxing on because I guess it just made everyone want to see more of the sport.
Yeah, yeah, and I just that's a cool story, and I love that in this fight, Winky fought out of character, proved that he could fight. Jermaine, I mean, like, man, they both got hurt. They had lumps on their head. Remember that? It's just high level. Of course, we needed to see a rematch. The fact that it was a draw probably hides it in history because it's almost like it didn't happen. They both went on to different things.
Right.
Jermaine eventually getting knocked out by Kelly Pavlik in that all-time great fight. And then who did Winky ultimately get solved at? Did he not lose until B-Hop got him at that catchweight?
Might have been.
Interesting. Or maybe Paul Williams got him. But then I think that was aftermarket Winky that got that Paul Williams got. Yeah. Look, I mean, that's why he's a Hall of Famer. Winky had a really sneaky, great career right there and got screwed a bunch of times. Rafe, what's your number three?
Okay, so again, this falls into I want to see a fighter I love to watch just going to work at his best and putting on a great performance, even if the fight itself is not like a classic back and forth war. And I'm talking about this time Juan Manuel Marquez.
Yes.
At lightweight.
Yes.
2010.
These two MGA fights missed my top five, like barely. I was trying to find room for them, and I couldn't.
From the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Saturday, November 27th, 2010, Marquez Katsidis.
Yes.
These fights where, I mean, one, it, of course, it has the incredible drama of Marquez getting dropped hard, like half of his soul left him in the third round, and he got up. And there's some incredible stat that boxing Twitter, you know, famous Matthew Swain tweets a lot. There's a stat where he got up from that knockdown and proceeded to land like 30 of 40 power punches on Casitas for the rest of the round. Like and he got dropped so hard. And the rest of the fight proceeds to light Katsidis up, and Katsidis fights with real balls in that one. Like, he is tough as hell and takes a wicked beating, and you just get to see Marquez open up that entire combination punching toolbox and let his hands go, and it is just amazing. I love it.
I am more man. I have bigger huevos.
So here's the deal. It's almost as if the cartoonish muscular, you know, is it PEDs? Well, let's ask Memo era of Marquez at welterweight, which, by the way, PEDs or not, it was great watching him fight Pacquiao the last two times, fight Bradley, etc. It almost like people forgot this quick lightweight era ever happened. And that's, to me, the pure greatness of Marquez in a division above his head, body not hulked up yet, going in there in fights where for him to win it, like the first Juan Diaz fight, the classic, you know, one of the best fights of the last 20, 25 years. He had to be legitimately vulnerable and had to get hurt. And, you know, he's always been a flash knockdown guy. You can drop him, but, you know, finishing him is another story. And for him to be there against a young, balls against the wall, peak Michael Katsidis, who never quite had the skills to be super elite, but this was like that last stretch where just with straight balls and aggression, he was a quasi super elite. And Marquez had to be a man to get him out of there. I distinctly remember watching that fight. And, you know, the Casamayor fight was in that same little package of time as well. I love lightweight Marquez so friggin' much. That's a great fight to rewatch that entire era. And by the way, the next fight after, Licar Ramos, he definitely took a dive. They had to preserve the Pacquiao fight. It happened, all right? It happened.
Brian, also fun to note, and you, Brian, might want to watch this entire card because I think it does have your other favorite, maybe your favorite moment as a boxing fan. I probably started off the HBO broadcast. The American boy,
yes.
Jason Litzau, beating Celestino Caballero. That pissed me off so much, Brian. Pissed me off
it
bad.
It almost made my top five. Yes, that was the same night. I lived
same
in this
card. And then in between the famous war between Andre Berto and Freddy Hernandez.
That was that the same card, the same night?
Same card.
Wow, I remember. So I lived in this condo.
Off TV, Brian, we've got Arislandi Lara, 13-0, beating Tim Connors. We've got Keith Thurman, 14-0, beating Fabio Medina.
I lived in a condo for like 10 months. I had white carpet, and I had this great stone fireplace with a TV over it. And I remember dancing on the couch after Litzel pulled that upset. And I thought he was going to get destroyed because Caballero was so hot the previous few years on HBO, just like destroying dudes by brawling inside with those long octopus arms. Man, I love that fight that night. What a great night. What a great pick, Rafe. All right. Thank you. Moving on here. Another kind of forgotten fun little brawl. November 29th, 2006. I don't know for sure where originally aired, but I always watched it. No, I know it was. It was on the MSG network. Gus Johnson was on the call. It was from the theater at Madison Square Garden. That is where it aired live, and I saw the replay many times. John Duddy takes a 12-round middleweight decision over what was left of the husk of Luis Ramon Yuri Boy Campos. Rafe, do you remember this random sort of brawl? It was as Duddy was on the way up, and it was a ballsy, it wasn't St. Patrick's Day. It was November 29th. It was just, Irish fans going sick, and back and forth, they hurt each other multiple times. I think Dave Bontempo was the color guy on the call, and twice during the fight, he's like, this is the fight of the year! This is the fight of the year! It's one of those just sleepy good fights, not a lot at stake. But the old veteran, Campos, who fought everybody, right? He was like 1,000-0 when he finally took a loss against Trinidad. He had the kind of performance that guy Soto had a couple months ago. Remember?
Humberto?
Yeah, remember Humberto before
when he beat Rios?
Yeah, and then he fought Jesse Vargas and fought a man for a while. It was like one of those type deals. Rafe, I love that fight.
I haven't watched it. The Duddy era in New York, I do remember that because he was the last Irish fighter that really got New York jumping. They could really build those St. Paddy's Day cards around. I remember them because of McSorley's. He would be, they would bring him in and out for promotion. There would be people leaving the bar on Paddy's Day to go up to the Duddy fights. It was just they haven't had an Irish fighter based in New York who really got people hyped in the same way since. We've had Irish American guys. There was Shawnee Monahan and the Long Island crew. Drew really well in the Garden, but never really, barely even made it onto TV. And they would bring the one year they brought in Matt Macklin to get sent to hell by Sergio Martinez, even though Julie Letterman didn't know what she was looking at and got the score wrong. The Duddy was when those felt like real crazy fun events.
Yeah, and this was like a movie fight, and it was like that stretch where you're like, okay, John Duddy's not like for real, right? Like, he's limited. He'll get sent to hell eventually, and he did end top out when he lost to Chavez Jr. and then retired afterwards. But there was that part of you that like wanted him because, it made him feel like a real life Rocky in a way, where you're like, you wanted him to be something because of the following and he's just this honest Irish guy who brought it. And shout out to the Irish crew, Rafe. Thank you. Great fight.
Yeah. Oi, oi. All right. So here's one. This is Emmanuel Steward certified. Oh my God, look at this fight. This one, the co-main event on the Devin Alexander Andre Kotelnik card. That is a. Yeah, look at this. Oh my God. The co-main event under Devin King Alexander and Andre Kotelnik, August 7th, 2010, from the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. St. Louis, Missouri?
Is this the hell they say. Is this Zab Maidana?
No. It is Tavoris Cloud before he got punched in the eyeball.
And you know how hard.
Yeah, you got to hit a man pretty hard. Tavoris Cloud defending his IBF light heavyweight title against Glenn Johnson.
Yes!
War. This was a fight. I remember my girlfriend at the time, she was with me while I was watching it. And by at like the 10th round, she had just, she hadn't said anything. And then after the 10th round, she's like, why are you watching this?
Is that it the was, same lady that you fancy today?
No, we are. This is not. We are. This, no, no, no. Not, we no, are no, not no. still together.
No, 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 no. Wow, great story. Wow.
It's just brutal. I mean, they beat they both guys so much heart, and just Glenn Johnson is they're just so good, man. These guys are just ripping into each other. It's Emmanuel Stewart approved.
You know what I wish
for
you did?
Sure.
I wish you turned to this lady. Put your head on her shoulder and said, this is all I know. What else can I do? Yes, thank you. So I remember that fight, but not like the details. I'm going to go back and check that one out as well. Dude, Glenn Johnson brought it in a bunch of these fights. Remember the first Chad Dawson one? Fun theater right there, all right? Indeed. All right, I'm going to move on. Number two here. It's Sexy Sergio time. It's one you've seen a lot, but it's always worth revisiting. It's December 5th, 2009. For a lot of us, the first time we realized who this man was. The first Paul Williams fight, Boardwalk Hall, Atlantic City, HBO. Like you, Rafe, I love the crap out of this fight. And the definitive nature of the knockout in the rematch in, what, the first round? Really made people forget.
Second round, I think.
Really made people forget how awesome this fight was. It was Martinez. What was he filling in last minute? Moving up in weight. And Williams takes a majority decision in 12 rounds. Very controversial dispute. It could have gone either way. But
Samson
just
screaming travesty in front of the HBO cameras after. It's a travesty!
I remember having not known about Sergio Martinez's history before this, just knowing he's some 54 titleist from another country. And being like, oh, this guy's going to get destroyed. And then he gets knocked down early in that first round. And you're like, oh, man, this is going to be easy. I wish Paul Williams was fighting freaking Mayweather right now. And then late in that first round, we all remember Sexy Sergio flash knockdown on Paul Williams. And we got a fight.
Flash knockdown. Not Williams was hurt bad. I mean, he was like that. He fell like face first into the ropes after that shot.
And not only was that a great call for Lampley, and Lampley's obviously the best, the legend, but there's some certain Lampley nights that I specifically love. The surprise in his voice as this became a war. And not only is it just fun because it's an aggressive, fun action. I mean, everything Paul Williams touched back then was great in that regard. I could have had Williams Margarito right here as my number one. I love that fight. But Rafe, the way that their two styles meshed, with Williams being the full volume come at you and Sergio bending over, doing Sergio stuff, looking to counter with those quick shots and then cover up and then get out of the way. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. I was so friggin' excited for the rematch because I thought we were getting the first one basically over again.
Yeah, well, shoot. I mean, why wouldn't you expect? I mean, especially with Paul Williams, who been in war like 12 rounds with Margarito. Before Margarito was suspected of anything, you know, before the iPad was introduced. Paul Williams was not a man you expected to, you know, to be one shot KO'd ever. So that made that in the second fight even more shocking. But Brian, yeah, thinking back, especially, you know, it's hard to put yourself in those shoes again in hindsight because we know what Sergio Martinez went on to achieve over the next several years. But when he's basically being introduced to people, except I'm sure there are some the real hardcore out there will be like, oh, I saw when he got robbed against Kermit Cintron. I knew how. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. You got the score right.
I saw it when Margarito knocked him out. Yeah. No, you didn't.
But that's the thing. They introduce him and say, okay, this guy was stopped by Margarito, you know, 5 years ago. He started boxing late. He's moving up in weight. He used to be a cyclist. You look at him, he's got, you know, he's already Sexy Sergio. He's got the little cheap tattoo on his arm. And you're just thinking, no, this is not good. This is the late replacement. They never bring in dangerous guys for late replacements.
And they never have fun styles. And I had never seen the Cintron fight. I knew nothing about him for this night. I think a lot of fans were like that.
I was in the same boat. And then all of a sudden, you know, and he gets knocked down real quick. And you're like, oh, man, this is it. Here we go. This sucks. And then we just had a classic. That is really like a fight, you know, one of those fights that elevated my appreciation and love for the sport to whatever level I was at. It made me even harder core. Ooh. Maybe harder. Ooh, wow. And
wow.
You know, I love it so much that I didn't allow myself to put it on this one because I feel like I bring it up all the time. It's a great one, man.
Thank you. Thank you. At least I got the score right on that. What do you got for me? Number two.
All right, man. So, he's a favorite of ours. And it's a fight that maybe before he really broke out on the U.S. radar, because it's right before he goes into the Super Six. It's when he wins a vacant version of the super middleweight title. December 6th, 2008, from Nottingham Arena.
Yes.
In the United Kingdom, Carl Froch with the 12-round decision over Jean Pascal.
Great pick. I almost put that in mine. Yes. No one ever talks about that fight. It was one of those British specials where both were like on the verge of busting out and becoming something, so they put them in against each other. It's like Dubois against Joe Joyce.
Well, there's a real title on the line here, and of course Jean Pascal is not a British fighter, but I hear what you're saying. We don't necessarily get fights of this quality with a guy who's 23-0 and 21-0 in the States here, or at least at the time we didn't. Now, who the hell knows? You got Uzbek guys fighting for titles when they're like got half a win on their record and 18 gold medals. But anyway, this fight is awesome, man. I mean, the amount of energy that these guys put out in this fight,
yes.
They are swinging so hard, and it gets a little sloppy. I mean, because both of them, when they really brawl, they get their punches get wide and they're just go, but those are awesome moments. I mean, they're almost like Provodnikov Bradley moments of like blind swinging wide punches, balls out craziness. A few other things that are fun to note about this fight, and Pascal is lighting up Froch early, which, I mean, when Froch fought some of the more, you know, some quicker guys or some of the sharper counterpunchers, that was not unusual, right? We could see Froch get lit up early in fights, but he's such a chin, so strong, and just kept coming. And in the, you know, over the late rounds in this fight, he just even rounds where Pascal seems like he's winning most of it, Froch has that way of pulling something out of his ass late in a round that hurts a guy, and then it swings the whole thing. And he does it again and again and again. And some fun trivia on this one, Brian, because I actually rewatched it recently.
Nice.
One, the ring corners, or not all of them, but I think two of them are sponsored by Hooters of Nottingham, a great place to watch a Carl Froch fight.
Very true, very
great
true.
Great place to catch a Cobra fight. And this on this card was the debut of one Tyson Fury.
Are you serious?
Professional debut of Tyson Fury fighting Bela Gyongyosi. But what's great during the Froch Pascal fight, I realized this the other day watching. You're watching at all, like ringside. It's like the entire Fury family. I saw Big John. I was like, is that Big John? Is that X-rated Big John right there? And then I'm looking down, you know, like a few seats to the right of him, next to Mick Hennessy, the former promoter of Tyson Fury. Oh yeah, there's young Fury with the hair and with like the little he's got that little Elvis when he still let that little Elvis curl
yes.
hang down in front, and he's got his son sitting on it. Paris is behind him, prime Paris, young Paris. And there's I think it is the brother who passed away, Hugh, that trained Tyson earlier in his career. Huey is sitting next to Big John. You see them all there.
I know where they all came from.
He's come out of my nutsack. So he's going to be good, isn't he?
I love all the gypsies just posting up in the front row there. That's great.
Yeah. And you get to see them throughout the fight. It's almost distracting now because you keep going, oh, what's Tyson doing here?
Great fight. I love the action. I love that we're bringing it back to the forefront, because if we don't talk about these fights anymore, Rafe, it's like they didn't happen.
This is what's wrong with today. The young ladies today, they're not learning from mom how to cook with losing recipes.
We can't lose the recipes, Brian. I wanted to add just as a, and there, if you want another little bit of Cobra porn for the Frotch heads, the 80K crew out there, it's a fight that gets lost because it wasn't on, it was on Epics. We didn't get it on HBO. And it was sort of sandwiched between the two phases of Frotch's career, coming out of the Super Six and losing to Andre Ward in the final there, and then going on to 80K in Wembley and all that other stuff. It's sand, but it made one of his greatest wins.
Boutte.
And it's such an awesome 5-round fight.
Yes.
Boutte
in the crowd.
Send that man to hell.
So there's, who's that soccer analyst at ESPN? The white guy. From Britain.
Caucasian guy?
Some Caucasian. He lives in my town, and we used to go to the same barber, so I talked to him. He was at that fight in, like, the fifth row, and he basically was like, that's the greatest sporting event I've ever been at for, like, electricity and craziness. I forgot the dude's name. He used to play on the Scottish soccer national team. Whatever. Nice guy. Anyway, top bloke. Lives
Jim
in my
what?
Town. I don't know. Some wet guy. And don't, I thought you, by the way, I thought you were totally bringing up the Yusuf Mack win. Because that was right in that transitional phase.
Would be
phase.
Cobra porn, wouldn't
that,
it?
That would change a man. And it is, yeah, it is in line with that. It's on brand. All right. Got to roll on here and close it out with my number one. October 4th, 2003. In full disclosure here, Ray.
Oh.
Okay? I was a massive boxing fan, late 80s, all through the 90s. More of a heavyweight fan than, you know, I wasn't following Roy Jones fight by fight, for example. But when Nas blew up late 90s, I was like appointment viewing. I think around 2001, I started to pull out, so to speak, Rafe. I would only be, we watched Tyson Lewis. We had a big party in 02. I remember having a party for Lewis Klitschko, randomly enough, and the fight was obviously absolutely amazing. But from, like, 01 to late 04, I really wasn't
Jacker.
Watching. I jacked, okay? I remember, like, I didn't watch Gotti Ward live one or two or three, but, I caught them all after the fact.
I mean, Brian, you do not have to apologize to me. I was a complete casual during those years.
So
complete.
There was one fight specifically that I caught on Showtime because, and you know what actually fueled that gap? I lived with my parents until 2000. We got an illegal black box in like 94. So from 94 to 2000, I watched all UFC boxing and WWE pay-per-views. Then I moved out. And then my parents moved to Florida in 2003 and gave me the black
box.
You
got the box.
So I got the box back. So I had great cable, all that. This was the fight that I randomly turned to at the right time, and it started. The first of a trilogy on Showtime.
Turned off the Spice Channel and turned on Showtime.
Mandalay Bay Resort in Las Vegas. Joel Casamayor, one of my campeones. Remember I went up to him in the crowd at that Golovkin fight?
He's always dressed really sharp at fights.
Man.
Like he's got nice suits, not afraid to wear, put a little color in, like some very bright red. And he's just smooth. He's a smooth fighter, dirty fighter, but a smooth,
aggressive
smooth character,
Cuban,
man. I like that
has
guy.
Has the Cuban slickness, but can get dirty for the vacant WBO junior lightweight title. TKO 6 over Diego Corrales. I'm not sure if you remember the specifics, the first of their trilogy where Corrales came in the camo shorts. It was boxer against puncher, and of course, Joel can bang, and they were brawling, and then Corrales got that vicious cut in which his bottom lip, you could basically see through and see his soul through it, and they gave him like another round or two to keep fighting, and Joe Goosen's in it, and he's trying to, keep him in it, and finally, ref had enough, and Corrales gets so pissed off. I remember watching that fight going, I had a moment here. Like, it wasn't quite, oh my God, but it was definitely.
A right hook upstairs. Edwards shakes his head.
There's a statement. Down goes Edwards.
So I encourage you to dig it again and watch this fight because Corrales shows so much damn balls to want to fight through with his face falling apart. And of course, Rafe, this is about three fights before the first Castillo fight. The greatest fight of all time, more or less. So this was my introduction. I knew the name because I remember the pay-per-view build for Floyd, but didn't have the black box, didn't watch it. Rafe, this was like, oh crap, I should probably start watching box again. Do you remember this fight? Do you have any memories of their trilogy? They had an immediate rematch in which Corrales won a split decision in 04. And then in 06, they did the third fight in which Casamayor won a split decision. your thoughts on this great rivalry.
I just told you, Brian, I'm coming clean right here. I was casual. I'm a little younger than you, so no, I didn't even watch this fight. I've never seen this fight. I've read about it. I've heard people talk about it because of the injury and because it was clearly a fight people remember, but I haven't watched it myself. So I will go back and do some of the knowledge and educate myself a little bit here. I was actually, you know, it's funny when we started doing this, I went looking for fights that I hadn't seen that were great and I could throw in here and watched like Junior Jones, Orlando Canizales. And I was like, oh, this fight's awesome, but it's just not the same. It's like, you want to the emotion, you want to be able to explain what it meant to you in the moment, where you were when you watched it. They're still great fights and we should all still watch them. But for this, it's like, this is about finding our comfort food and learning some new dishes that we could add to our comfort food recipe book.
I love that. And here's a postscript on that. End of 2003, I remember watching the Showtime end of the year, like wrap up show they did with Al Bernstein. And they replayed part of that fight. And I was like, I love that fight. And it was only like a month or two later, a buddy of mine was like, hey, I'm training boxing all the time. I got this enclosed porch at my parents' house that they let me turn into a boxing sort of like ring gym setup. Started going over there 3 nights a week. We'd spar. We had a full workout plan. Then we'd spar with the headgear. And Rafe, I remember going home and never watching boxing like I watched it before. Like, it birthed such a deep hardcore respect for the actual science of it and the checkers and the chess game of it. Sorry, not checkers. That I hadn't ever, thought about before. I was hearing Jimmy, because then I'd be going a couple nights a week, getting my brain bashed in and trying to go to the grocery store afterwards and dropping stuff all over. How was that for a little punch drunk love right there? And from that on out, I've never stopped. Those next few years, in my prime single years, I was every Saturday night watching that black box. So when I say I've never purchased a boxing pay-per-view, I actually mean it. But that's just the way it is, Rafe, okay?
You realized it was your destiny to work in this field because you knew that you never could bring yourself to pay for a boxing pay-per-view. And there was only one way to do it then, which is to go get a job that would allow you to watch it for free while working.
And by the way, all those years later, look at me now, Rafe.
But look at him now. Look at him now. That's all that breed is. That one right here. Look at us now.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay? You got to look at the whole man. You got to look at the whole body.
Munguia is naked.
Yes, he is. Rafe, that's our show for the week. Special thanks to Bob Arum. You and I, let's put our head together. We'll get in the think tank, maybe come up with another fun bonus episode for the people out there. Maybe a little deep dive action on another all
I'm pro boner.
Rewind. Yes, you are indeed. Follow you at Rafe Bugs. I'm sure you'll be writing some type. Like, this is your time to write buffoonery, right?
Buffoonery, you can expect it. You can count on me. I'm bringing the buffoonery.
Okay.
Hey, man, don't be a blank. You know, hey, you're really going to act this way.
Yep.
You're really going to be buffoonish.
Indeed, at The Athletic.
Got that right.
At TheAthletic.com. Do you have any message for the people? Anything?
Everyone, be safe. Be careful. Take care of your people. I do care about you and your people. I want the best for all of us. Watch your backs. And that's it for me, man.
All right. Thank you. A little message for you from John Fury.
You're a Yankee rooster, my friend. You're a hatchcock.
You got a hell of a hatchcock. That's it. Special thanks to Alex Godinez for always having our back. Dylan Hager, one of our favorite listeners. I'm sure Ulrich Anderson is loving us across. Hopefully the virus hasn't hit Denmark. I don't know.
Something is rotten.
Yeah, something indeed. Not Kessler's sister. Look into that one. All right, that's it. I got two words for you. Rafe, we out. Thank you.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.